Good morning to everybody. I know for some of you it's afternoon, but out here in the Grandview Ranch it is good morning. This is the third level group. This is the group that we're supposed to be talking somewhat about marketing, and I got a few questions regarding some of that stuff, but until then we are going to look at some paintings and discuss some other things about your work and marketing and stuff. And let's just jump right in. You know, I like to get a question or two before we start. We don't have very many paintings this week, which is perfectly fine because, you know, I can talk about anything at any point, and I've got all kinds of things that we could look at if we get totally bored with each other. But I don't think that ever happens with us. So anyway, I would like to welcome you. We've got a few new people in our group. And like I said, anybody's welcome to send anything in. There was a question about sending things in with homework assignments. You know, the thing is, some of you are doing coaching assignments outside of this group here. And sometimes with that, it's kind of complicated to have a coaching class inside of this group here, because it's too specific to a thing. And normally when you bring something into a painting, I kind of like to like have something to demonstrate that's a bigger philosophy, you know? So this is not like a good teak. This is not like where you come to get your mom, you know, to pat you on the head and say, oh, wow, that's a really pretty painting, or, you know, to show off. It's like, okay, how can this lesson be used for everyone? So that's kind of what I'm looking for. If you're a coaching student, you know, it's not a place for you to like say, okay, what do you think now? Because it's out of context to everybody else. But you're welcome to submit more stuff. As you know, I think it's good that you guys paint a lot. And the more that you paint, the better you get. We had some questions earlier this morning with my coaching call about ego, and we can discuss that a little bit later. But yeah, this is a place where, you know, we can show off our stuff with everybody, and that's grand. But it is a learning center, and we want to be able to learn. And oftentimes I try to monitor the phone calls enough so that we don't dwell on things that are not for the group. So anyway, so I'm just conscious of that, but you're welcome to send anything as usual. Is there any questions out there that I could answer right now? Yes, Skylar.
Varnishing, what would you recommend? I know we had this conversation. I thought bring it into the group because it's a broad subject.
Oh my God. It's actually a question that came from another person this morning, from Matthew from Ellensburg, Washington. He says, what kind of varnish do you recommend? I can't afford the expensive stuff. Is there a type of cheaper option that would work? So you just happen to be on the call, you know, like call you. I didn't pay you to say that. That was just perfect timing. So anyway, so varnishes. So in this day and age, we no longer need to varnish. Varnishes are a thing of the past. Primarily, artists would varnish paintings back in the olden days because they needed to protect the painting from soot from old stoves. They smoked a lot back then. They had a lot of tobacco. There's a lot of pollution. People have no idea all of the coal fireplaces that were burning back, you know, 500 years ago. And so these paintings would get really black very quickly, and they needed to be cleaned and cleaned often. And even the surface itself, you can imagine like cigarette smoke, literally nicotine on the canvas surface itself. And so artists pretty much decided that, hey, we need to get something that we can clean these paintings off so that, you know, something that's easy. So they started putting varnish on a painting. To understand what varnish is, for the most part, it's demartiers, which is sap. Right now, it's being harvested in Canada. Back in the 1500s, I don't think that they were importing it from Canada. But demerara is a sap that comes out of a tree, and you put it in a jar, and you put triple rectified turpentine to it. So that's the really heavy, smelly stuff. And you add that to the sap, and for weeks, and I know this because I used to make my own. And so for weeks, you pick up the jar and you shake it, and every day you shake it, and slowly that sap disintegrates. Now, the thing is, the reason why your varnishes smell so bad is because it is that triple rectified turpentine that we hate so much. And but it's the only thing that's strong enough that will actually melt those demerara varnish tears. That's what they call them, tears or sap crystals. Once it's all kind of diluted, you can apply it directly onto a canvas. And this is pretty much demerara varnish. And that's the one that I use that's traditional. Of course, you have a lot of artists out there going, oh no, don't do demerara varnish. It is going to first kill you because you've got, a turpentine in the air. And second, it does yellow. It gets a patina on it. And frankly, I kind of like the patina. If you go into old paintings, old masters' paintings, the patina is actually kind of okay. It's got a nice age to it. And so they have these other varnishes, but predominantly the reason why they use these mastic tears or these demerara tears is because just like when you make it, you dissolve it in triple rectified turpentine. So when you paint your painting with the demerara varnish, the turpentine goes away. But let's just say you wanted to clean the painting. Well, you could take triple rectified turpentine and go back over your painting and turn the demerara varnish back into fluid, and you can take off that dirty layer of paint. And as we know, if you think about it, if you actually go clean your painting at that point, the demerara varnish would go away. Whatever they say is going to turn yellow is gonna, you could take that away again, and then you put a fresh coat on top of it. So the purpose of the varnish is so that it's removable. And that's why we kind of use the demerara varnish as a whole. It's removable. Now you have crayon, Krylon varnishes, and all these other varnishes that are out. Some of them don't have they don't turn brown on you over age. They don't, but pretty much. Now, another option is to take like, hardware varnish, like floor varnish. And I've seen artists actually do that, where you just take, polyurethane, and you could polyurethane your painting. But, polyurethane comes out of the bottle kind of yellowish. And so you're kind of tinting your painting just a little bit. The problem with that, and I've seen this on painters, is that they decide to polyurethane it. And the problems with polyurethane, unlike demerara varnish, is that when demerara varnish dries, it's still very pliable. It's like rubber. It's like rubber cement. So if the painting fluctuates and does things, then it will move with it. After 100 years, it stops doing that. And when the canvas starts to move, or do you get that cracking that we get when we get from, old paintings? But some artists will polyurethane their canvases, which is really kind of funny, because when you actually go in and press onto them, they crackle up. And so the polyurethane is not the best to put onto a canvas. You can't put it on a board. But seriously, you don't need to do anything to it. It does enhance the painting. It takes away like burnt umber. When it dries, it gets kind of chalky. So you may want to varnish that. I myself, if I buy a new car, I want to have a shiny car. I want a bright car. When I walk into the museum, I expect the museums to have canvases that have beautiful reflections on them so that they look finished. And so a lot of people go, no, don't use gloss varnish. You can't photograph this stuff. It's like I smear the varnish on like it were, cotton candy at a fair. I mean, it's just you can't do too much water shit. It's like I like it super, super shiny. Now you can cut it and do a 50-50 mixture. I myself like to spray my varnish on. So what I do is I hold the painting down flat like this, and I take a spray can and I go, oh, look, I wrote a book. I don't know if I've talked to you guys about it. But anyway, I like to spray the painting, and I go one way and then the other way and the other way. It's kind of a little tricky. You don't want to go too far or too low, but I put on a whole bunch when I spray it. Now, the reason why I spray it is sometimes my painting isn't 100% dry, and they tell you got to wait 6 months. Is 6 days is good. But it's got to be dry enough so that it's dry to the touch. If it's dry to the touch, you can varnish it with a spray. If you're going to obviously do it with a paintbrush, you're going to wait a lot longer. But 6 months is way too long. That's just what's written in the can. And when I hear artists spout off, oh, you got to wait 6 months, it's like, yeah, tell that to somebody who has to pay their rent and they sell a painting. It's like, oh, you can't have it for 6 months. It's like, no, I'm spraying this sucker this afternoon. So anyway, so I like to spray my varnish. The thing is, you could use even liquid as a varnish. And I know some people are like, oh no, you can't do that because it is a permanent surface. So once you put liquid on top of the painting, it ain't going anywhere. And it's a fallacy that once you spray paint, you can't paint on top of it. So even if you do a layer of varnish on top of your painting, you can go ahead and paint on top of it. It is perfectly fine. People use dimmer varnish inside of their mediums. And so if you could paint with dimmer varnish inside your paint, why can't you paint over it when it's dry? So it's kind of a little bit of a fallacy there. The main thing is don't get too anal over it. It's not a holy relic, and enjoy the process. If you do spray, make sure you overspray. If you do get dibbets of varnish in here, it's a pain in the ass to fix. So make sure that when you're spraying, you hold it horizontal, spray it, and then let it sit for 4 or 5 hours flat in some place. And then you can put it back up. Otherwise, you'll get little runs and drips. To fix that is impossible. So I don't know what to say outside of that. Varnishing your paintings. I myself like a shiny surface, and dimmer varnish is what I use. What do you have any questions about anything else about varnish that I may have not covered? I need a your mic is not on. I can't hear you.
What about the bubbles?
The bubbles.
Bubbles?
Yes.
Yes.
You shouldn't get bubbles. You shouldn't get bubbles. So I don't know how you're getting bubbles with the spray.
No, with the varnish that you paint on,
Yeah.
the Gamvar.
The Gamvar. The thing is, if you put on it thick enough and
Yeah,
you're
could it
going over
be
it,
a rough surface.
it be what?
Well, an uneven surface, like with multimedia painting.
It could be.
Or,
I'm
yeah.
not quite sure. I've never really experienced bubbles. And the thing is, it's like here you got this masterpiece. You've painted your Mona Lisa. It's great. And you spray a varnish on. For about a year and a half, Grumbacher varnish. This is the one that I love. It's my traditional go-to when I look at Kamvar and all these other varnishes. It's like, yeah, I didn't grow up with that. So I'm a little bit of a snob, and I like, but the Grumbacher varnish for about 2 years, you would spray and it would get these funny flakes and funny little bubbles in it. And somehow I think that the mixture was off. They seem to have corrected that because I haven't come across it for a while. But if you spray this wonderful painting or varnish and you get a weird oddity in your varnish, it's like, yeah, it's pretty painful. But it's a really good question because it's like on everybody's mind, varnish or not varnish. I like to varnish. Yeah, some people say it's too blurry. Some people go, oh, I can't move the eyes. I can't get the reflection off my eyes. But I think it's pretty much personal taste. Any other questions about varnishing? Yes, Skylar. Okay, we still don't have a mic. You got to make sure your mic is on. That sounds like you're getting there. Still don't have a mic on you. Let's see here. That should be on your side here. Do, do. Yeah. She went away. See, she's somewhere else. So I could turn it on from this side. I'm starting to get really good at doing a Zoom call. So, well, we could get to it a little bit later. If anybody else has any questions, oh, here she is. Let's see if we get her on here.
Stefan,
Yes.
I'm having problems with it's very, very dry here, and my paintbrushes are like drag sticking in the paint. I have walnut oil. Is that, do I add that? I'm not sure what to do about it.
What are you using right now?
I use straight paint out of the tube and turpentine.
Okay, so walnut oil, you can add walnut oil. You should, do that because you sh sometimes you need the paint to be a lot thinner.
Yeah.
So what I recommend you do is to add, I would go with linseed oil for the most part. Walnut
Okay.
oil is kind of used in gambling products, and you can mix walnut oil and linseed oil. And so, a lot of people are like, oh, I need to have something else. So the walnut oil came on the market and it's a little faster drying and it's got a little more sheen to it. But some people have allergies to nuts and they try doing a painting and they're using gambling stuff and they go, oh, I can't use oil paints because I'm allergic to it. It's like, oh, maybe you're allergic to the oil that's inside of it. Linseed oil is pretty much what most other paints are made out of. And linseed oil is a pretty stable thing that's been used for thousands of years. I would always just add a little bit of linseed oil and turpentine. And usually the mixture is one linseed oil to two turp or Gamsol, if you
Okay.
once of the odorless. And that's probably the best medium. And linseed oil will, it should be really pretty smooth to
Okay.
paint with. So anyway, we'll see if that's right. If not, we will look for another answer for you. So, Scott,
Okay.
did you make it back real quick? You had one more question. Let's see if your mic's working. And she's not in. So, okay.
Stefan?
Yes.
Along those same along the same question, so I'm doing what you're telling me to, using linseed oil and Gambisol. My concern is I mean, the first time I went in, I just used Gambisol and paint, and I was going to go back and add a little linseed oil. Like a third,
Yeah.
like a third to the terp, I mean to the Gambisol,
Yeah.
right? And how many layers can I put on that thing with that mixture? And can I go further on and add more linseed oil as I go?
Yeah, the thing is there's a lot of this, oh, lean over thick and thick over lean. You can't do this, you can't do that. You can't paint on top of varnish. And yet you have like Maxfield Parrish that he would spray a canvas, start it off with dermavarnish, and then put another layer of paint on top, and then another dermavarnish, another layer. He just layered on top of each other. I've got paintings that I've put 10 paintings, 10 layers of paint, both thick and thin. Yeah. I've been around for 50 years painting, and these paintings are sitting around here, and there's no cracks. There's no, and I've got fat to lean to fat, thick to thin, adding dimmer varnish, no varnish, paint on top of varnish, layered more linseed oil, less linseed oil. Pretty much oil paint is pretty durable. It takes more than our lifetime. And the thing is, paintings that you paint right now that you may make a mistake with, and it kind of, is a consequence of your painting. Your painting starts to blow up. Firstly, it's a lot of knowledge to kind of sit and kind of chew on. But the reality is that Frank Lloyd Wright said to one of his students, he said, when you are designing,
Figure out. I gotta listen to this.
so
Sorry.
when so Frank Lloyd Wright said, when you are designing a building, you always want to make sure that you put planter beds so that you can plant ivy around it, because 10 years from now, you're going to wish that that building never existed. And so it's the same thing with painting. It's like, oh, we're so worried about our painting right now. And the thing is, 10 years from now, it's going to be in some thrift shop, and you're going to be scared to death that somebody's going to find it. So right now, be in the moment, paint, paint, paint. Don't think about your ego. You're not painting for posterity. You're not painting for future collections. If you are, shame on you, because you are not going to be a powerful painter. You need to make lots of big mistakes. So, if you want to add more oil or not, it's kind of interesting. We're always, experimenting. I've done all the experiments. And believe me, if you want to add more or less, or some Gamsol, no Gamsol, just oil, it's just it, if it impedes your in the moment the way you put paint on the canvas, then add a little bit more turpentine. If not, now one of the mediums that I use quite a bit is liquin, and liquin is just something that here's my paint, here's my jar of liquin. I take some of that, put it in there. Why? Because liquin's a pretty good product. It causes the paint to feel a little smoother if I need it. It dries consistently with a nice little shine on it. It's supposed to be a substitute for mirage oil, which is an oil that I've made back in the past, where it takes 3 days of boiling turpentine right at 90 degrees, because if you do any more, the turpentine will explode. I have been there. I bought the t-shirts. I've got the book. I do. I've got the Mirage original book, which the San Francisco Library got paid for. I figured
So
go ahead.
it, my problem is I did the I primed the panels, right? I primed the panels with the white Rust-Oleum, right? And I was expecting it to be a slipperier surface. Why isn't it slipperier?
I have no
How
idea,
come?
because everybody complains that the Rust-Oleum surface is slippery. It could be that you've got a primer that's got a matte thing to, I don't know, but we'll talk about that during coaching. So,
I apologize. Okay,
oh, you
sorry, guys.
don't apologize. It's just that there's people here going, what is he going to show us her paintings? But there's not a lot of paintings here, so we're going to get back to other things, because I want to talk a little bit about marketing and stuff and make sales. And I had a question this morning about FASO and things, and I don't think we're going to quite answer that, but there's just so much to do and so little time. All right, here we go. There we are. Hopefully everybody sees my screen. So let me just grab this bottom corner here. Hello, I see you getting all ready. Already, she's ready to pounce. You got your mic on? Hello?
Yes,
There
I
you
can
are.
say.
Okay. So what were you thinking?
Was thinking that it was going to be easy to paint, but I was wrong.
Well, the thing is, actually what you did was pretty good.
Really?
The thing that it's a thing painting. So when you're painting a thing, it's like, yeah, it just looks like it's like, ah, But when we look at this, you see these beautiful cast shadows?
Yes.
Yeah. That's what the painting's about, is about light and shadow. Paintings are all about light and shadow. They're not about the things that we're painting. So when you paint a thing, you've got to be looking for the light and shadow. Here it's just, yeah, look at these nice shadows in here. This leaf is almost all in shadow. See the dark purples up here going into the browns. So you have a little bit of highlight. And when you're not sure, squint your eyes. When you squint your eyes, you can see things better. But you know, these stamens are lit, and these lines in here are cast shadows. And so
Yes.
right now, if you just put the cast shadows in, and then you put super cool. So I'm not quite sure what you're using for a color in here. But when you get into these colors, that color could be even as cool as cerulean blue, because it actually is reflecting probably the sky, because these surfaces that are on these lilies are very shiny, and they could very well be reflecting a little bit of the sky. But it once you get the light, because that's what makes this picture. Outside of that, it just looks like an orange starfish, you know. So you want to always create the light, but it's not bad. It's not bad at all. You're
I'll
getting
add this.
what?
I'm going to add shadows to it then.
Okay. Yeah, and you can glaze those on, and you could glaze them on with a little bit of dimmer varnish and linseed oil.
Thank
Try
you,
to
Stefan.
like tie it together. Of course, that's what they're for. Okay. Michael. Oh.
Hey, Stefan.
Hey, what's
Skylar
happening?
wants me to read his question.
Okay.
Skylar, chat it out, will you?
Please, I don't hear her, what she's saying.
So Skylar's chatting. Skylar's going to type something into the chat, and we're going to be able to read it because the unmute button isn't unmuting.
Okay. So it says, I tried. So we're waiting for you. I had a varnish. I had varnish question on ratio can be used on acrylic. Okay, so the ratio of varnish, you know, if you're making your own varnish, your varnish would be like, when I make mine, it's very thick. So I when I make it's all these tiers, and then as little as turpentine as I can to get it melted. Once it's melted, it's kind of a nice little consistency. I use spray varnish because it comes out of the can, doesn't matter. You can put oiled varnish on top of acrylic, but you can't take an acrylic varnish and put it on top of oil. So that might be something that you might want to consider when you're actually, if it's an acrylic painting, be careful. Well, actually, if it's an oil painting, be careful that you're not putting acrylic varnish on. But for the most part, I think they're mostly oil varnishes or oil-based varnishes anyway. What is the ratio? Yeah, again, if you're making your own varnish, it's personal taste. I would say the thicker the better, because I like things shiny, you know. So there you have it. So Michael, are you here? Michael. Michael. Michael, turn on your mic. If not, well, good. Cover here. So here is Michael's painting. Michael's actually one of my coaching students, full disclosure. Again, I'm talking about this painting because I think as a group, you get to see kind of like, yeah, the before and after. And you can kind of get my main thing again is focus. This is exactly the same thing as our flower painting. And so he shows this up and he signs, he says, this is it, I'm done. And I go, well, it's a bunch of rocks and a tree. And so she's back in. So it's a bunch of rocks and a tree. And I go, yeah, okay, you know, it's just his backyard painting. This is just part of his coaching, go in the backyard and do some painting. And so he comes back and I go, well, where's the effect of light? And he goes, well, you know, I kind of It's there on the tree and on the rocks. Now, the first thing when you're doing the effective light, you want to have one central focal point, and that central focal point should be about this size of the egg. So where we're actually looking at this, and we want it in the middle of the third. So it's all here in this book that I wrote. I don't know if you guys know this, but I wrote a book. But anyway, this is part of the keys. And if you actually go through the keys, you actually hear me talking about these things. And so that it's should be no secret to all of you. So the central focal point should be somewhere in the middle, just to the left of center, should be the brightest area. You could have a couple of other focal points. So anyway, so I had a coaching call with him. I said, here, look at this. And so this was my scribble on top. And you know, I can't do really fine things. And the coaching call is only 15 minutes. But I go, this, see these angles? You know, that's the power of light coming into the painting. And I took out all the light out of the rocks down there. And I put a secondary light in here. Now, I would adjust it if I were painting, it would be a little less here, but mainly it's that light. I even wanted some light to come through the banister there, some light. But if you notice, I'm even purposely bringing the light in, even got a little bit of light there. When you start, look at the two. One is definitely a thing painting. One is drastically, drastically a light thing. Now that's me coming in. It's like heavy-handed, coming in hot. That's the way I come into a painting. Because if you don't go in hot like that, you're not going to have success. Although we know highlights are cool. Scarlet keeps coming in. Okay. So that was me. That was him. And then this was his end product. Now, where is it here? So this was his, is this his end product? No, that was the one we just looked at. Oh, I didn't pull it over. But the thing that was missing in his end product was that it wasn't quite, this might be the end product. The other one probably is less. But you can see it's not quite as dynamic. Now, I come in hot, I come in bold. There's a lot of artists out there, guys. If you don't elevate your visual stimulus, if you don't bring something to the viewer that goes, wow, it's going to be really hard to get noticed. You've got to get paintings that come into the gallery that people walk in and they want to walk right across the room to go see your work. Anything less, and you'll just disappear. There's all just, it's got to have that element of light that just makes things absolutely spectacular. And it doesn't take much. There's a cat painting here. I'm not sure if we talked about it last week, but look at a big dark painting with that element of light in it. This is a painting you would pull towards in a gallery because it kind of says, psst, 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 come here, come here. It's that light, that contrast. That's what makes a great painting. If it were me, I'd come in a lot hotter. I'd have more light, just, you know, it might only be the size of a chiclet. Remember chiclets, those little square gums that we used to get? So a little, you know, like, but it's that reflection. So this isn't hot enough for me, but the element of light, that cat would be a boring painting if it didn't have the element of light in it. So my point with this is like, yeah, this is this. This is, you know, definitely fired in. So, and since he's not
Question.
here,
Can you
yes,
hear me now?
I can hear you now. Hooray!
Okay, thanks. Just testing.
That's it? Okay.
Yeah.
So, is Bailey in today? Bailey, are you here? She's got to send me a couple of paintings. She hasn't here. Here's another painting by Michael that he painted. I haven't seen yet, but again, it's a painting of a duck. It's like the painting of a cat. It's like, you know how many people paint like this? How many people are sitting in the adult ed room on Saturday afternoon with a teacher and they're painting ducks. It's a very common subject matter. It's a great subject matter if you put the element of light into it. It's always about that lighting effect. And so if there were cast shadows of grasses that he was standing in or had specific light, if you actually could get the duck to look a little wet in front and get a shimmery quality, it's like this is a wonderful thing, but we don't paint things. They're just props for light to paint on. So let's look at Doris's painting real quick. Now, part of this whole light thing is that, if you actually take it to the next level, it doesn't matter if you paint something that is interesting as a thing. It's a, we make it interesting because we bring in the light. So, Doris, are you with us here? I feel like it's a
Hello.
seance. Hello. Oh, by the way,
Hello, how
before
are you?
I'm fine. How are you? You got a couple of questions. So, you shared something which is great because we had mentioned it. And what was really funny is that, I go, oh yeah, everything in Poland is gray. And it's like it's so drabby and gray. And then I said, oh, I'm over dramatizing that, or what do they call that when you like say,
No, you were spot on with the soup joke.
yeah. So he said, yeah, everybody drinks soup and they dress in gray. And so then he sends me this thing that's the color palette of Poland is basically gray. And so I take back my apologies. Apparently it's the truth. I just thought that was
Now
hilarious.
you nailed it, and it's like 10 or 15 years old meme, this one.
Oh
It
my
reminded
God.
me, you
It's,
reminded me. To me, so
yeah, see, I try not to overly, generalize and put people in
this is
categories, but
where I grew up in
yeah,
this
it
kind
looks,
of block houses, so yeah.
it
Yeah,
kind of looks a little bit like Ukraine too. It's like,
but we see plenty of colors in it. Is there some green and blue, but I guess it's only Polish thing
well, I
to
think a lot
recognize the colors in it.
I think the thing is, Americans, if I could speak for generalizing American, is that we kind of view a lot of those countries, Poland and Czechoslovakia and Hungary and Russia, as being kind of this gray palette, which is totally because we're not educated to the fact that they actually have color to them.
It's the color of sadness, Stefan. That's
Yeah,
a hilarious.
but the thing is, I could take you to San Francisco, you'd have the same, and San Francisco is a happy city. So, Seattle is a lot like this too. So, we overly generalize things, but I just thought it was so hilarious that you brought that into our conversation. So anyway, so what were you thinking with the organ player?
I just went to church and I saw this scene, not this one because, but what I saw was the guy playing the piano or the organs or whatever you call it. And it was like Rembrandt because there was much more brown around him. It was huge organs, a dusty scene. And he had a window behind his back, huge window that I couldn't see. But what I could see, he was in the dark. And there was a ray of light on his neck. Going through on his arm, there was a single ray of on his arm going down to the keyboard and everything, but I had no camera on me. I wanted to sneak upon him and make a picture, but I couldn't. I had no phone and I was on a mass. Anyway, I went home and I went straight back to the computer and I found something that was relating to this scene that I was inspired by. Because I wanted this effect of light, and I realized churches are, I'm not religious, but churches are great for inspiration of light because they are made this way. There's always half dark in the church and the tiny windows, stuff like that. It's a great place for inspiration, and I hope there will be more to come. Obviously, the central focal point is on his light, on his shirt. The secondary is on the on the book with the notes that he's reading. And there's some eye magnet on the cable in the down. There's a tiny fraction of light. I think the third third focal point can be the effect on his shoe. That was a
Yeah, it could be
pretty
in the back
nice,
there. You know, the thing
unlucky
is,
brush stroke on the shoe. And that's it.
yeah, the thing that you could have done here, again, you know, we as artists manipulate everything we see. And that's one, you know, lesson that you can get out of doing something like this. And I'm gonna do this, you know, with a different color, just so you can kind of see it. But you said, you know, here you've got the secondary focal point. And what you could have done is take this cord here and actually like swung that cord out and brought it somewhere in here. You know, again, you could have manipulated the cord so that you brought the viewer in. And you could even take it really wide like this, you know. Instead of taking it out, it could have gone into a plug over here, let's say, and you would have darkened that. But just having that line go through, and then this part of the line would be dark because it would be silhouetted. And it just kind of like would have been just kind of an interesting element. Instead of having it just disappear out of the bottom, it actually could have been part of the eye magnet. And that's how crucial, you know, these things are. You kind of play around with them, you know, where you might think, you know. And this would be dark and you know, this would be lit up just a little bit. This would be super dark, and then you'd have a little bit of light coming in here to attach to the cord. So you could do something like that when you're doing eye magnets. But like everything in the painting is part of creating that composition. I absolutely love this one. You know, I have been in Europe in churches, and I have a thumb box. And if you guys wanted to see it, I could go get it real quick so I know where it is. But it's a small little painter's box that you hold in your hand that you put your thumb in. And it's got a sliding palette that slides out and a back on it that holds canvases. So you can hold this whole thing. It's no bigger than a cigar box. And you can sit there in church and paint. And I've sat in the back and painted inside the church doing plein air. So if you want extra credit, you could do that. Of course, some people say how blasphemous that is, but I think, you know, God gave us the talent and the ideas to do it. Why not? You're artistically inspired by God. And besides, you won't fall asleep during mass. I think this is just stunning. And again, it's that element of light that makes it. I mean, how many of you sat and thought, oh, I think I'm going to go paint an organ player at, you know, Derry Church? But you could see the illuminated light is the story, and that's what makes paintings is a light story. Even in religion, they put those big, you know, silver things around the head to bring attention to us so that we look at the portraits. So it's all purposely done. It's all theater. And when you're doing churches like that, if you pay attention, you'll notice that it's all designed for you to go in and kind of with eye magnets spin all the way up to the painting up on the ceiling. And you could just watch people when they walk in, they start turning counterclockwise and they'll start looking up and they screw themselves up into heaven, spinning around. So that's just part of the experience. You get people a little bit dizzy, you throw in a little incense, and it's like you're ready for mass. So any questions about this?
Oh, no questions. Actually, I had one question regarding marketing, but I'm guessing later.
No,
Or can I
let's
ask
hit it.
you?
That's what we only got one or two more paintings left. So go ahead. You had a marketing question.
I had a question about the face-to-face marketing, and I'm having my first art show at the end of the month. And what are your inputs on what to do and what not to do, especially on your first art show and in your first art show speech, if you get one?
And you'd be like, would you be greet people or like how do you handle that
Some obvious tips from you, from your experience, because I know, like every one of my question, I can Google simple answers, but you have more
the
insight
words.
and better answers. So, as
So
a viewer, so
so
I don't know what to do.
Marketing is a different thing than painting. And this is the third group, the gold group on marketing. And so take notes. First thing, you should listen to YouTube videos that were produced on Tom Hopkins, Tom Hopkins, Hopkins, Tom Hopkins. And he was one of the guys during Carnegie and all these salespeople in the 40s and 50s. He was one, and he did a series of things that how to sell anything to anybody. And he talked about closing questions and things and leading questions. And I practice this a lot. And one of the things, if you're going to go to art marketing, is to listen to marketers, because you've got to look for clues. And when you look for clues, you lead them in. And one of the biggest questions, the worst thing you could say is, if you have any questions, I'm right here reading my book. That's the worst thing you could do. And another thing too is, don't sit down and don't have any chairs. If you're going to sell, you got to be ready to be on your toes, and you got to like, yeah. And second thing is that you should be wearing red socks and underwear all the time. Because red socks and red underwear should remind you that you're a consistent marketer every day. Every day you're marketing, every day, so it's to remind you, it's like, why am I alive right now? Oh, I have red underwear. I'm a marketer. So you want to kind of like wear that underneath everything so that you know that's your confidence, that's who you are. And then you have Tom Hopkins in the background knowing how to answer questions. And then you go, you might start off something as like, greetings, these are my works. If you have any questions, and then of course they're gonna go, all that. And then you kind of have to like file through that, okay? Because they're immediately going to like shut you down. And so what you do is you kind of file in there. And this is the thing that at this point, this is where sales are made or lost. Yeah, every time I go into a car lot, I'm possibly a client. And I hate it when a salesman comes in and goes, "Are you going to buy a car today?" It's like, really? And so I turn around and say, "I don't know. Are you going to sell me a car today?" It's just a completely different thing. It's like, yeah, I've walked off car lots when I've wanted to buy something, and I've been put off by the guy because he says, "Well, you got to be pre-qualified or whatever." Like, God, I just want the experience of sitting in this new Cadillac. I want to see what it's like. So then, and then you have to gauge your people. It's like if they come in to buy a car and they sit in the seat and they go, "Ooh, Corinthian leather. Wow. Smell the leather." It's like, "Oh, I love this." Don't go up and say, "Hey, this has got a four-cylinder LE cam with a dual exhaust system," because I don't care. I just like the leather. Thank you. Can I get undressed and sit here with my red underwear and absorb the leather? It's like, so the leather, some of you got a visual of that real quick, but I've never done that. But the thing is, if you are a tactile person, it's like you sell them tactile. If they're definitely, So if somebody comes up and goes, "What kind of investment do you have in these paintings? I mean, is painting a good investment?" Then they're talking dollars and cents. And then you better have like, well, most artists do this. I make sure that there's a 25% increase on my work. My work in 1905 sold for this. This is what this sells for now. So you got to listen to your client. And then you got to ask questions like, "Have you ever bought an original painting before?" Because for the most part, they'll buy your prints. And so you want to steer them into the originals. And then, you want to find any objections. Why aren't, why don't they have an original painting? Is it the price? Is it because they don't have space? Is it because they don't like the burden of owning something that they can't throw away? Yeah, there's a lot of baggage when you buy a painting. It's like buying, a sculpture or something like that. You got it for life. It's like buying a puppy. It's like, if you don't ask those questions, it's like, oh my God, you got to feed this thing for 15 years and it bites you every time you try to pet it. So you kind of have to listen if they're interested in paintings as a whole. How do you decorate your house? You open up a conversation with them and you listen to hear they go, well, I pretty much decorate around color. And so now you know that talking about colors in a room and having a painting that you color you create around. You talk about a painting being the center focal point of a room. It's like, and you say a lot of times, a lot of people, they got it backwards. They like bring in the couch and the carpets, and then they look for a painting to match, when in essence, you should buy a painting that you love and then deal with, the rest of the room, buy the pillows and things to make it match. So, you should buy the artwork that you love and ask, questions like, do you like landscapes? If not, do you like more modern painting? They might come up, and a lot of times, this is Tom Hopkins here. So they're looking at your painting, they're going, wow, this painting's great. They're like, let's just say your preacher painting or the organ painting. And so they come up and they go, wow, that is just great. I love it. But everything in my house is in blue. And this is a closing question. This is how you turn that around. You go, if this painting were in blue, would you buy it? And they go, yeah, I would. And go, well, I have one in blue at home. And then you go paint one on Friday, you deliver it. You see how you kind of deal with things? So it's a continuously interesting conversation, which just so happens to be, watch this. You're going to go, oh, Stefan, you are just absolutely such the marketeer. This is a good little thing to watch. And I've never shown a video on here. So I want to see if this actually will work. So let's see how that goes. But this is from a TV show that I love. It's called I Love That For You. And she is auditioning to sell on QVC, which is a home shopping network. So you sit on TV with your credit card and you buy stuff. But the thing is, it's all based on sales. So let me see if this will work. It's very short. It's only a minute and 20 seconds, but it's on sale. So let's see. This is an experiment. If not, we won't do it.
Just sell us the pencil. Okay,
Can you hear it?
just the pencil, not the other stuff. Okay. An architect uses a pencil to build a house. An astronaut uses a pencil to plan a journey to the moon. And by the way, when was the last time you wrote a letter to someone you love? What I have for you today is a portal to the person that you are meant to become, the life that you are meant to live. With this pencil, your dreams can come true. And why shouldn't they? Why not you? Okay, great. Okay, thanks.
So, did you guys catch that? So, when you are marketing, you've got to be in this state of crafting little stories, little things to engage with people. And people don't mind talking to you as long as they're not being sold to. People don't like to be sold to, but they like to be. I mean, you saw this. She was selling them a pencil. Well, who needs a pencil? But when she displays it, like, when's the last time you wrote a letter to yourself? What's the last time you did? And why shouldn't you? Why shouldn't you own an original painting? It's like this is an opportunity. Normally you buy prints. Why shouldn't you have an original painting? There's nothing like having an original painting. An original painting constantly changes in the light. You see the impressions of the brush strokes. You actually like see the painting constantly for the first time. You can lay back and travel within a painting. There are a lot of ways to handle objections when things come up towards you. But you could see it's like crafting. How many of you would have thought out of the box when somebody says, here, sell that pencil? And that's what you've got to start learning. It's like, and why should they buy your painting as opposed to other paintings? And you could sit down and just start writing questions. But when you have a closing question, and you'll see that hear this in the Tom Hopkins, if you have a closing question, you state it like, if it were in blue, would you buy it? That is a yes or a no. Yes or no. That car dealerships don't do it. If that car came in blue, would you buy it? You had already said you would. God, if that car were in blue. And the thing is, you said, wait for it. You go, yes, go. Let me make some phone calls. Let's get it sold. The thing is, that's how you have to like work with people and think about people. If they go, well, I'm not quite sure. It's like, where do you live? And they go, well, I live, in the next town over in Spalsburg. And it's like, okay, are you free this afternoon? After my show here, I'll drive it over. I'll leave it with you for a week. If you love it, keep it. If not, I'll pick it up. Yeah, I'll even put it up on the wall for you. See, you don't think about, a lot of people are like, oh, what am I going to do? Carry this painting around for, the rest of the day while I'm shopping, or I'm not sure if I like it. Back in their early times when I was young, and I would walk into Persian rug stores because I love Persian rugs. And they would always roll one up and stick it in the trunk because they know that once I rolled it up to take it out, the room would look empty. So get it out. And there's nobody out there looking at paintings, talking to you, that's going to stiff you. You don't need a driver's license. You don't need a down payment. You don't need anything. Just drop it off and pick it up, or let them take it home and try it. So anyway, so that is a little bit on marketing, and I'm glad that that worked for us today. That was really cool. The TV show was on Showtime, and the whole TV show is about coming up with scripts to sell things. It's called I Loved That For You on Showtime. So anyway, any other questions do you have?
I got one.
Yes.
I was just over at the library. I just moved into this new place in New York, and I went to the local library, and she's asking me, I'm looking and I'm saying, hey, where's your art? She goes, oh, we only have one. And I said, well, I have some paintings. She goes, oh, you do? So I'm like,
well, see, you're a guerrilla marketer. That's just it. Yeah. There are a couple of gals that in Berkeley made their name for themselves and now hang in museums, but they started off selling their work in coffee shops. So you can sell.
I got one of those too.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, if you just put paintings on the wall, nobody gives a shit. Yeah. You got to sell. You got to have, an opening. You got to engage the people who are going to have this. And say, do you have a mailing list? Let's put together a Friday evening because you guys close usually around 4 o'clock because nobody drinks coffee so late. Let's have a sip and view party where they can drink non-caffeine and caffeinated products. And maybe you could come up with a special drink for the evening that we can put on the menu for the whole week. Maybe it will be like, this Stefan drink or something like that. And we'll make us something up. And then we'll invite everybody that you have on your mailing list to come in so that they're buying coffee, like lots of it to come and
there's
see
a coffee. The diner that's down the street, they have it mostly tends to a lot of people who are like more country folk. And what I was going is my plan is to start doing a lot of plein air painting all around the landscape.
Yeah.
And then putting it up on the diner.
Yeah. I mean, I live in Mount Shasta. If I'm going to go to a little coffee house here, I'm going to put Mount Shasta scenes for the tourists to come in. But, they have a mailing list. You have a mailing list. You negotiate. You always kind of think about what is in it for them because nobody cares about you. And then once you have the date, then what you do is that you need to market. You need to go to the newspaper if there's still one there. You need to put stuff up on Facebook. You could hone Facebook down to just your town or just your neighborhood if you can. That's how Facebook, you have to pay for the ads, but they will hone it down so that you're only paying for people who will most likely show up. You can even hone it down for people who buy coffee products and stuff. So, and buy paintings. So Facebook will say, so what are you selling? You're selling paintings. So what else are you going to sell? Coffee. they'll hone down their mailing list to people who have already bought coffee and paintings. You know, that's how great Facebook is. And people go, oh, you know, Facebook, this. It's like, whatever it is, it's like it's there for you. You have to pay a little bit for the ad. But the thing is, you know what you used to have to pay in the olden days to get an ad in the newspaper that kind of hit your county? And then nobody paid attention to it. And then, you know, you could do it yourself. So no matter where you go, you could have an instant show.
Hey Darius, do you have a list? Are you putting together a phone list for people who show up at your art gallery?
A phone list.
Well, a
I don't
mailing
think I'm
list.
doing it.
So that's another
No,
thing too. So
I have my mailing list. It's one person on it.
yeah, okay, so that's your mailing list. But the thing is, you started off with zero or one. And that one person's your brother that lives in, you know, Czechoslovakia. So you start off with one. So you've got to have a little bit of a, you know, a little tiny art show somewhere like that. One goal is you want to greet them, and you know. Number two, you might have a giveaway painting. You might have go because that's your fallout at the end. It's like you might have in a corner, you go, have me paint your ugly stepsister, you know, for free, and you'll have a Christmas gift. So you'll have a little raffle in the corner there. And so, you know, I'm not saying paint, yeah, you know, but you could paint a dog or whatever you want. And the thing is, that's something again that you could try to get their business cards and stuff. Your whole goal while you're there is to try to get people. If they come into your space and you don't have them leave without you getting their email address, shame on you. You should at least practice your game to at least be able to pry out an email address, because for your next show, you're going to need it. That's how you're going to start keeping people up. I mean, if you notice, I've scammed all of you to be here on this phone call. I've scammed all of you to sign up for my newsletters. I've scammed all of you to watch my YouTube videos. It's like, how do you present it? What you say? This is, yeah, hey, yeah, learn how the big secret of painting. It's like, there it's on my face. You know, it's like, so the thing is, it's a constant game that you play. It's then you give them quality. You're not scamming people. You're actually giving them an opportunity to buy your work. But somehow or other, you've got to figure out a way to connect with these people so that when you leave, you might not sell any paintings, but you've got 15 or 20 email addresses of possibility. And then you go somewhere else and somewhere else. But meanwhile, with this list, you start sending them blogs and newsletters. Yeah, it's because right now it's really hard for you to get that. Your only time you're going to get that is like right now. So at the very end, as they leave and go, well, you know what? Come December, I'm giving away a free painting. Or even it could be tonight. I'm giving a free painting tonight. But you could actually, like, you know, plan ahead. Yeah, if just give me your email address and have a card, pencils, throw your email address in there. If you win, I'll contact you. It's the only way I could contact you is through email. And it's a very clever way. They like your paintings enough, but they didn't bite, but they stop. Then, hey, there's a possibility of them having something for free. And the thing is, you go, yeah, you don't win unless you play. So that's another way that you can actually, you know, try to get names and stuff. And then you have to be able to try to market into that group.
This is actually a great idea. I would never thought about this. I just wanted to excuse me because maybe I'm translating it wrong. It's not, well, I'm saying art show, but it's a display. It's 1 month. There's an opening party, and then the paintings are there for 1 month straight.
So what kind of
Obviously,
space,
I'm doing a rough.
what kind of space is it?
It's local cultural some community house.
Yeah. So
So
you got an opening, which is usually the worst time to have an opening before everybody knows. So the thing is, you want to have, you know, you have an opening, and then you might have a, you know, a closing. You know, it's like, yeah, at the end of the month, so people can kind of come in and go, you know, hey, this is kind of fun to do this, but you know, at the end of the month, we're going to have a super bash. I've got a German band that's coming in. We're going to have free Landjäger German pretzels. You definitely want leave it here. Give me your email address. I'll make sure you get an invitation. You see, you got to think about this stuff. And at a closing, people are, because at an opening, they're like, well, let me think about it. I'll think, once they leave that door, you're not going to see them again. So if you invite them in for, you know, wonderful pretzels, beer, and a stripper, it's like, you know, you might have to fall out on the pole dancer, but you can give them beer pretzels. There's not that many. And you can count how many people are actually invited to that. And then, you know, you could ask the thing, would you mind if I have like an afternoon print signing or something like that? Anything that you can start marketing, you know, you being there, or say, I'm going to be there painting, you know, like on a Saturday. You're going to go there and do some plein air painting, and you can, you know, invite like a little party or soiree to come in and take a look at it. The thing is, the hard thing is getting the space. That's the thing. The rest of it is, how do you play the game to get people in? And you've got 30 days to do something, you know, ingenious. And you're playing.
Hey, real quick.
Yes.
What about doing, I wanted to talk to you about doing charity.
Okay, yeah. So charities are great. The thing is with charities is that a lot of people are not scammed by them anymore. You know, so charities, you know, I used to do a thing for Make-A-Wish, and you pretty much put together, and I've gotten lots of money, you know, when I'm selling paintings as a group for like charities like Make-A-Wish. The thing is, so many artists abuse that possibility. They would, you know, that Make-A-Wish will say, yeah, have a charity and then send us a check if that's what you want. So they get no engagement. Sometimes you'll have a charity that they haven't been burned by artists before. And, you know, the thing is, we fall into the backwaters of, you know, our forefathers here who have gone in and burned these companies. And, you know, they have a huge mailing list. They have a huge following. You know, even if it's a charity for school, there are people that will write $10,000 checks if their kids are going to that particular school. And so, you know, they're a great way of going. But, you know, you got to realize that they're not going to give you a mailing list. If they do, then you better work your ass off to make sure that it was worthwhile to do that. They've been abused so much by people like us that they're kind of leery. And it's like, well, why don't you just go ahead and just have your charity and send us a check afterwards? But a charity's great. Yeah, anything's great. It's like, you know, if you could get your brother Fred, who's in charge of the local donut drive for the fire people in, you know, in Saskatchewan somewhere, it's like, well, that's great too. Or you can make up a charity like that. Say, you know, I want to donate donuts to the fire department, and, you know, make up a charity. And then, you know, that's kind of a little bit of your mission. And there's a lot of people that might show up and buy a painting because it's going to the firefighter. Yeah, anything to sculpt and get your name out. But the thing is, what you want to make sure you're doing all the time is branding. Branding your work, branding so that people in your town see you here, see you there, see you there. It's a lot of preliminary work. It's a lot of like playing around with Facebook. It's a lot of question. But I got to tell you, I've had art shows with groups, and part of my Power to Create class, the second half of that was marketing. You know, we'd actually put together an art show. So the first part was, okay, we created these great works. The second part was a 17-week course. And it's all scripted, and we've had all this stuff going. But another thing is, like, you know, really printing invitations and, you know, going out to, you know, a place where there's all doctors and going into each office and say, I'd like to have you give this to Dr. Robinson. I'd like to have him come and participate in my show. We're having beer pretzels and beer, and maybe a stripper might show up. I don't know, but have him come. He'll have fun. You know, so I, you know, and you could just drop that off at the guest, a little bit of a soliciting thing, but, you know, some smaller offices, huh?
So I had the question. I actually am working for a cancer organization. And they have this like monthly art show going on. So I was fixing on doing some of that in there because it seems to be a monthly thing. I just wanted to know how best to capture the opportunity to make the best of it.
Well, the thing is, the best of it is trying to promote your name under that umbrella. So, you know, if they're doing something every month, you pretty much will drive up, drop off your paintings, leave, and nothing's going to happen. So you could say the second week of that, you could have a location painting. You're going to do a planar painting in their backyard, and people are invited. You're having an event on top of that, not just dropping off your paintings. It's surprising that, you know, you think there's a lot of competition amongst you artists. There's a lot of competition, but there isn't, because artists are lazy. Artists are you know, they don't think. They're not willing to make anything extra. If you take their paintings off of them and hang it on the wall, they're happy. And so people don't have to do a lot to satisfy artists because, hey, you got them out of your house. You're happy because now you don't have to trip over them for a month. But then there's always that moment where you have to bring them back home again. So what we want to do is avoid bringing them back home again. And then you have to work within the constraints of what you're working on. So have a Saturday, you know, paint out. Invite people in the community to come and paint with you on a day. Make it like community awareness for art. Give a talk. One of my students, love her to pieces. You know, she was you know, kind of trying to get her stuff out into the community, a little farm community in Minnesota. And she had the idea that she was like a Soroptimist club, which is kind of like, you know, a local thing. She said, could I come in and give a talk? And they said, yeah. And it took a lot of balls for her to do that. But most artists don't do that because they're lazy. And it's a good thing they're lazy, because that opens up the door for somebody who wants to do something. And so she put together a talk. I worked with her quite a bit. I had to work with a lot of her confidence. But I said, be in the present moment that, you know, like, what did art, how did art change you? It wasn't a bunch of artists. It was just people. And she, and how finding something in your life that you're passionate about changes your life. And some of you feel that when you've stumbled onto painting. And all you have to do is just be present, going, yeah, you know, I've doing this has caused me to travel in places that I normally don't. I've learned how to do Zoom calls with my teacher. I've met interesting people, and my life's much more interesting because of this thing that I chose. And, you know, and then you kind of preface it like, well, it doesn't have to be painting. There are other things that you can do, but painting rocks. And you could say, yeah, you could, you know, do this and this, but have they ever built a museum for those people? And yet for an artist, if you master painting, they'll build a museum for you. There'll be a statue in your town that has you pointing up and down at the ground with a palette in your hand and a bunch of brushes in the other. It's like, yeah, painting is a viable, wonderful thing if you want to do something with your life. And if anything, it makes your walk through your parks more interesting because you see the light and the shadows and composition. You pay more attention to ducks and things. It's like your life is fuller just visually by being an artist. So what you need to do is kind of turn people on through your art. And this is kind of like, even like if you're going to have, you know, a beer fest with strippers and pretzels, you know, it's like at some point you stop and you talk about yourself. You go, I want to welcome you all to be here. I'm Stefan Bauman. It's like, let me tell you what it's like to be an artist and the possibilities there for you. It's an incredible thing. It's powerful. One of my other students had to do a talk in front of the Omega watch company in Sweden. They had a big, and it's like almost like a men's club stuff. And they invited her to come in and give it a talk. She was scared to death. What is she going to talk to a bunch of business people? They loved her. They loved her because it wasn't about watches and business. It was about living life and seeing things. And that's what you want to do with when you go to sell something, is sell the excitement of, you know, changing your atmosphere, your home, your your presence, collecting art, being part of, an artist life. Most people who start collecting art, you kind of don't just sell them a painting, you sell them the idea or the, the possibility of them following you forever. And you will show them, what they're missing in life through your artwork. And it will start with this one piece. And you could see that I was just constantly always creating those little things that are salesmen, but you got to get really good at that. But it's a practice. And so the first thing I want you to think about, if you're going to do an art show for the first time, is practice. Don't anticipate or don't judge the art show by how many people you sold a painting to. If people come in and you're kind of a little, nervous about talking to them, practice it. Go, hey, and you're going to make a lot of mistakes. A lot of people are going to go, you're too much for me. It's just, whoa, or like, you're just a horrible salesman or something like that. You're going to kind of have to figure out what works and doesn't work, how you want to be you. It's like listening to like Anthony Robbins. You can listen to how he speaks and you could adopt that. Tom Hopkins, how he speaks. You could even mimic some of the ways I am, because I'm always like really excited and fun. And so you want to kind of like always make sure that you are, kind of crafting who you're going to be as a salesman, because it's separate than a painter. And yet you got to push these things two together. It's a lot easier to sell a car than it is to sell you as an artist. And the future of paintings that don't even exist, but they buy into the idea that you're going to be the one that will share their life with them. So we ran out of time. As always, you guys rock. Is there any last minute questions before we say adieu? I didn't get to all the paintings. I apologize, but this is what we do here. Let's stop the share. Is there any other questions out there of anybody that needs something discussed before we go? Or did I say something that made you upset? No, it's all good. Anyway, you guys rock. I will talk to you next week. It's been awesome as always. Have a grand week and paint.